This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Good to be with you for the next 3 hours on this Monday. Roddy Jones is here for Mark Packer with his NBA hat on to celebrate Game 6 of the finals tomorrow night. Roddy, what's up, my man? How are you?
I am good, Wes. First off, I am glad to be here with you. Send my well wishes to Pack. Hope he gets well soon. The thing is, though, this is a great lesson for all you kids out there. There's an old adage, stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And the reason I'm wearing this hat is because I didn't follow that. You know, during the season, we're all well-oiled machines when it comes to all things, preparation, travel, getting ready, but also grooming. And my hair has not seen a pair of clippers since NCAA regionals happened back in early June. NC State against Louisiana Tech was the final game that we had. I took off. I went into off-season mode. The planned haircut is happening today, but I got the call to be on with you guys, and bad hair wasn't going to stop me, so I slapped on the NBA hat to celebrate my Hawks a little bit, and I'm happy to be here with you.
So maybe a surprise for all of us by the end of the show, and Roddy will show us what it looks like before the we'll have how's it going and how's it been.
Maybe we'll do that. Maybe I'll take the hat off. I'll comb it out a little bit. You can see the little poof on top of my head, and then we can do a side by side today and tomorrow after pre haircut, post haircut, and you guys can tell me how much different it is. Let me tell you, I look like a different person.
All right, you mentioned Pack. We had great intentions, folks. Great intentions. Mark was going to come back. We were going to potentially be together in the same room, maybe to do the show today and tomorrow ahead of the ACC kickoff on Wednesday. And when Mark was on his trip out west, those of you that follow him on social media, you may have seen the Packer and Durham hat at the Grand Canyon, among other places, Lake Tahoe. Unfortunately for Pack, he came back and tested positive for the Delta variant of the coronavirus. Now, Mark is fully vaccinated. Talked to him a little bit yesterday, said he's feeling a little better, but does have some symptoms to it. So we wish him well. We hate it for him, hate it for us, because we're going to miss him not only today and tomorrow, but we'll certainly miss him during the week in Uptown Charlotte, the ACC kickoff as well. But hopefully he gets back to us later in the week. But our best wishes to Pack, and we will trudge on without him. I know one thing he's not going to be happy about, and that is to comment and analyze maybe what we've missed here in the last couple weeks. Roddy, in a time of college athletics where it's supposed to be quiet, it's been anything but quiet. Seemingly June and most of July are supposed to be the off season. That just has not happened this year for some reason.
No, it hasn't. And it has been fast and furious. Obviously, NIL is the thing that's dominating the landscape right now. But, I mean, we've had playoff expansion. We've had NIL. We've had the baseball draft. There's been incredible sports going on. We've got the Olympics coming up. It's been crazy over the summer. It's probably the busiest summer that I can remember, maybe other than last year, but for different reasons.
Right.
This was a wild, wild summer. And the last 2 weeks since you guys have been off, there's been a lot that's gone on for sure.
Yeah, we're going to cap some of it here in the opening half hour of the show. Let me ask you this, though. We start Wednesday morning in Charlotte, the Commissioner's Forum. We look forward to hearing the first real comments of Jim Phillips in this environment. As we get ready for a big football season, we're going to see tons of quarterbacks. What are two or three things? I mean, you're going to be there with SiriusXM and ACC 371, of course, which simulcast our show every morning, and we appreciate that. But what are the two or three storylines maybe that could potentially emerge this week in Charlotte in your mind?
Well, I think the biggest one, Wes, that I'm looking forward to is when the media gets together and votes. Is it a done deal that North Carolina is going to be the pick out of the Coastal? Because the more people you talk to, you're hearing a lot of Miami love come out of the Coastal Division as well. So that's going to be one of the big questions that I have. That's going to be one of the things that I'm looking forward to seeing once we all get together and vote. I think the second, it's a great display of the number of quarterbacks that we have coming back. 13 of the 14 teams have a quarterback with starting experience coming back. And the one that doesn't, Duke, Gunnar Holmberg's going. He has been named the starter. You and I did the spring game. David Cutcliffe is really excited about him. So the quarterback play is going to be huge. But across college football, there are so many players returning because of the extra year. Production is up across the board. Production returning is up across the board. So just talking to each coach, you have to feel like with the number of players returning for every school, each coach is going to have a lot of optimism. And it's always optimistic season. It's always, this is our year. This is going to be great. We're going to improve. But this year, you really get the feeling that it might be true. So those are the big three things that I'm looking forward to. I know you've got some as well. What are you most looking forward to, Wes?
Well, I think you bring up an interesting point about the Carolina-Miami situation in the Coastal. And I think it is worth discussing kind of how, you know, Carolina and Miami are just kind of like 1A, 1B. And I expect it to be that way in the poll. I mean, somebody will be one, somebody will be two. The bigger question maybe I have behind Carolina and Miami is who's three in the Coastal? And that may seem, and I would go this. I think it's going to be interesting to see who's three in the Coastal and who's two in the Atlantic. Because for all intents and purposes, and I know there's a lot of being said, a lot of things being said about maybe where Virginia Tech is in the Coastal, maybe where Pittsburgh's going to be in the Coastal. I think both have really big games early in the year. That Carolina-Virginia Tech game on the 3rd of September seemingly gets bigger every week, okay? Pittsburgh plays at Tennessee in week two. NC State plays at Mississippi State. In doing some reading in the last couple of weeks, there are real season-defining type games for ACC contenders early in the year. I mean, we're going to be ready for Clemson, Georgia by the time practice begins, let alone the week of the game, all right? But the other games, Roddy, the other games we're not talking about as much are going to be, I think, really critical games for those teams. And I'll just give you NC State and Pittsburgh as two examples of teams that I think are playing really, really important games in the first 2-3 weeks of the season. Not that it's going to mean that they're going to, if they don't win the game, that they're not going to have a good year. But you know what I mean. Those early tight games, they can change a lot about a momentum for a team. And we're going to talk a lot about momentum. But here's why I'm excited about Pittsburgh and NC State and those games in particular. Those are places where you go in and you're not only playing for your team and your school, you're carrying a little bit of the flag in there. And you mentioned the quarterbacks. Yep. The one thing that's come back to me in the last couple of weeks of kind of reading up on the season is this is as strong a pool of ACC quarterback play coming back, I think, the league has ever seen. They're accomplished quarterbacks. There is some question at some schools about how it's going to shake out. You mentioned the quarterbacks coming. 14 schools, 13 of them are bringing quarterbacks to Charlotte this week, including Florida State that's bringing two, Roddy. Florida State's bringing Jordan Travis and Mackenzie Milton. You know why? Because Mike Norvell can. And I don't blame him.
Look, and let's not forget Virginia, who's bringing Brennan Armstrong and Keaton Thompson. So maybe they're bringing one and a half quarterbacks. The guy that we will certainly see take some snaps. It is going to be exciting to not only get these guys in a room and be able to talk to them, but to really hear what the narrative is. We're going to talk so much about the early season matchups that you talked about. We're going to talk about Clemson, Georgia. We're going to talk about those two SEC matchups that NC State and Pittsburgh have. We're going to talk about Miami and Alabama. But the biggest game early in the year is UNC Virginia Tech week one in terms of the conference race. That's the biggest game. And I'm not sure we've talked enough about that because it very well could decide the Coastal Division when you have a game like that. And also, when you look at Virginia Tech and the season that they had a year ago, the frustrations that they had, particularly on the defensive side of the football, Justin Hamilton's certainly going to get that improved. On the offensive side, Justin Fuente has been excited about Braxton Burmeister for this is his third year being excited about him. You and I sat in a room and Braxton Burmeister's his waiver was still going through the NCAA. We sat in a room with Justin Fuente when he was trying to decide between Ryan Willis and Hendon Hooker. And he told us, hey, this guy Braxton Burmeister, I'm really excited about him. If it wasn't for his waiver being denied, him having his foot stepped on and breaking a bone in his foot last year, we may be talking about Braxton Burmeister as a third-year starter for Virginia Tech. That's how excited Justin Fuente has been about him. He comes into the season with a full offseason as the starter. And on the other side, yes, UNC's got Sam Howell, and I think they are going to be a really good football team. especially on defense. They've got a lot of talent. There was some youth last year. They've grown up. They've got experience coming back. But offensively, we can't overlook the fact that you are replacing two draft picks at receiver, two draft picks at running back. That is massive. So I think that game early on should be circled with Sharpie, because that may be the game that decides the Coastal Division as we get down the stretch.
I think you bring up an interesting point about Virginia Tech. And as much as we talk about Burmeister, remember Blackshear's going to be there, James Mitchell at tight end, Trey Turner. Well, I mean, they've got players, right? And you mentioned Hamilton in the defense. That's why I think the Carolina-Miami situation at the top of the Coastal. Yeah, I get it. One of them's going to be one. The other one's going to be two. Who's going to be three in the Coastal and two in the Atlantic? That's just an early storyline I want to watch this week as we move to Charlotte. There are a couple of other things here. We're going to spend a minute in the next segment talking about things like, oh, I don't know, early reaction to the college football playoff. Early reaction. David Teal and David Hale are going to join us. We'll get their thoughts on what we're going to get the next couple of weeks in Charlotte. It's going to be really interesting. The storylines about the league, the games in the non-conference. You mentioned Carolina, Virginia Tech. There are other games up front that are going to be really important. Who's going to step forward? Roddy, there's a surprise in here somewhere. Who's the surprise team? Last year it was BC. Jeff Hafley comes in. All the cards are stacked against him. You know, I mean, look, while I think NC State, at least in my mind today, may be number two in the Atlantic when we vote this week, Boston College is going to get a lot of love in this deal. Boston College deserves a lot of love in this deal. He did a tremendous job a season ago in revitalizing their football fortune.
He really did. And I think there's candidates for that surprise on both sides. If you look at the Atlantic, I'll give you two. I think Wake Forest, first and foremost. Like, we just discard Wake Forest, it seems like, every single season. Offense is going to be fantastic. Ja'Cory Roberson is an excellent player, obviously, a receiver. You've got Sam Hartman back, who did a lot with an inexperienced group a year ago. Christian Beal-Smith as well. And then, again, this is one of those defensively, they have been hit with the injury bug a couple of times. They had a weird end of last season.
Right.
But if they can improve just a little bit defensively, they have a chance to be a surprise. The other one that I'll mention is Louisville. And coming into last year, Louisville was kind of the darling. But if you looked at what happened 2 years ago, they had some things go their way. And last year was sort of a regression to the mean. Like, all the turnovers went against them. It seemed like any time a play needed to be made, it went against them. And yes, they lose Javian Hawkins. They lose Tutu Atwell. But I think with Malik Cunningham back, Scott Satterfield's group was excellent on defense a year ago. Can they continue that is going to be a big question. But the experience at quarterback, that system, the improvement on the offensive line, I think could turn Louisville into a really good team. And then in the Coastal Division, we never talk about Virginia. We just, again, we go good North point. Carolina, we go Miami, we go Virginia Tech. Virginia's got a chance to have a good football team.
Yeah.
I keep mentioning health on defense, but that secondary has been ravaged by injuries the past two seasons. How they avoid that, I don't know. But if they can, Brendan Armstrong takes a step forward. This could be a Virginia team that's a tough out as well. So those are probably three candidates that I would give you to have a better season than maybe we are anticipating.
By the way, Virginia, a little brunch game early in the season with Illinois visiting Scott Stadium.
Oh, gotta love that. Gotta love that.
Bielema and the Illini.
Sneaky, pickup, wouldn't you?
Sneaky Bielema and the Illini coming to Charlottesville. Yeah, I'd like an 11 o'clock kick. Yeah. You know me, I've always wanted one at 9. I want to do the 9 a.m. game one day. All right, sit tight. When we come back, we go ACC Rewind. Yep, 2 weeks off. We've kind of stretched it out. What's happened? Oh, yeah, we got number one pick in the MLB draft to go along with MLS and the NFL. Brent Venables got paid. Roddy's looking for a loan. And more. Packer and Durham on a Monday. Roddy Jones is here, and you're with us on ACC Network. Good morning.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Monday edition, Packer and Durham here on ACC Network. Roddy Jones is in for Mark. You got us on SiriusXM ACC 371, of course, ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app, and good to be back with everybody. Hope you've had an early good start to your July 4th. We've been gone a couple of weeks, got a lot done. Some of us more than others,
Wes,
but nonetheless,
we didn't even cover what you did during these 2 weeks. Like what does Wes Durham do when he gets 2 weeks off? I mean, how was it? I know you played.
Oh,
a lot
use
of golf,
your imagination, right? Roddy. What do you think I did?
Played golf.
Correct. As much as humanly possible.
You
thank you very much.
You
no, all good. Now we did have some stuff happen here. Okay, we had some things go on. First of all, kudos to Major League Baseball, by the way, for getting the draft right, Roddy. I mean, after the College World Series, prior to the All-Star game, Rob Manfred, who's taken some shots, some deserved, during the course of the spring. But I would say this, the Major League Baseball folks may have gotten this draft thing right. Take it to the city of the All-Star game on a Sunday night and I thought this turned out to be a good thing for baseball, and it turned out to be a great thing for Henry Davis. He's taken number one overall by the Pittsburgh Pirates, Roddy.
First off, congratulations to Henry Davis. This was a year where no one could really get a good feel on who was going to be the number one overall pick. Was it going to be Henry Davis? Was it going to be one of the two outstanding high school shortstops? Was it going to be one of the two Vanderbilt pitchers? It ends up being Henry Davis to the Pirates. Congratulations to him. He's an excellent baseball player who's going to have a chance to ascend quickly through the minors, not only because of his bat, but because of his work behind the plate. I mean, a great arm. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to Louisville as well, because it's a major accomplishment anytime you have the number one overall pick. And it's a major accomplishment when you're the number one overall pick and you subsequently get paid, which apparently Henry Davis already has. So congrats to him.
Yeah, B.J. Surhoff, North Carolina, 1985. Paul Wilson, 1994, from Florida State. Chris Benson, the great pitcher from Sprayberry High School, went number one for Clemson in 1996. Pat Burrell of Miami, 1998, are the former ACC institutional players that were taken first overall. Henry Davis, Roddy, his game... I mean, look, they've got Jacob Stallings doing the catching in Pittsburgh, who just hit a grand slam walk-off over the weekend for the Pirates. I think Stallings is a really good player. Henry Davis has got a huge chance in Major League Baseball.
Oh, he absolutely does. I mean, you're talking about raw power at the plate. I mean, he hit almost 400 this season as well. And then you've got an excellent defensive catcher, great arm, great leadership ability. He's the guy, and incredible competitiveness. I mean, in talking to the people around that Louisville program, the dude wants to win at everything. So I think Henry Davis is a name that we could see in the majors in the next couple of seasons, because even if his bat isn't quite there, he's going to give you so much defensively and from a leadership standpoint that again, I think he can move up pretty quickly. So an excellent pick. It's one of those picks where you were going to go, okay, super high upside, take a big chance on a high school player. Did you need a pitcher if you were Pittsburgh, or can you get the cornerstone behind the plate? And they went with the cornerstone behind the plate. And Henry Davis is a good enough athlete where later in his career, if he wants to move somewhere else on the field, he certainly could do that as well.
30th consecutive year, the ACC's had a player taken in the first round. There were 63 players overall selected from the ACC into the MLB draft. Roddy, did anybody catch your eye other than Davis up at the top?
Well, I think overall it's NC State who led the league with 8 selections. 6 of the 9 regular hitters in that lineup get drafted. You add on Reed Johnston and Evan Justice to that. It really goes to show you how talented this NC State crew was. One of the big questions that I had was, where was Jose Torres going to be drafted? He goes in the third round. But up and down that lineup, you saw the incredible talent and being recognized by Major League Baseball. So the season obviously did not end the way we all wanted to for NC State, but just look at the talent that was on that team. It'll go down as one of the best teams that Elliott Avent has ever had, because there's some fantastic baseball players on there. But a couple of other first rounders. Matt Nelson goes in the compensatory first round. Sal Frelick goes into the first round. That was a big question on where was he going to go. So the ACC was certainly well represented from top to bottom.
Well, you mentioned Matt Nelson, the Florida State catcher, who had a phenomenal year as well. National leader in home runs, right? The other part about it is, Sal Frelick, Boston College did not qualify for the tournament, but that did not diminish the year Frelick had for BC and Coach Gambino.
No, it didn't. He's an excellent, excellent center fielder, and it didn't hurt him. I mean, his season really stood for itself. And then Cody Morissette was drafted early, too, for Boston College. Mm-hmm. So the question for Boston College this season was always going to be those guys other than Morissette and Frelick. But Morissette and Frelick had excellent seasons. They've got all the tools to be successful at the next level. And every single team in the ACC had a player drafted. So, again, it goes to show you the talent in the league that we had this season. And even though a team like Louisville, Henry Davis, didn't make a regional, didn't qualify for the tournament, that team was still loaded with talent. It was just a weird year where it didn't quite come together for some of these squads, but still very good representation in the draft from the league.
You know, Roddy, one final note here. When we were in our final week before we took our two-week break, Brian O'Connor was with us following their appearance in the College World Series, and Pack and I talked with him about how much money Griff McGarry might have made in the regionals and out in Omaha, and that paid dividends for him. He was a fairly, I think, third round, right?
Yeah, it certainly did. I mean, the guy was absolutely fantastic, and those things are real. Like you get there on the biggest stage, and you go and perform, and teams take notice. Obviously, they're going to look at your body of work and your tools and your projections and all that. But the competitiveness, like ultimately, these are still people making these decisions. And Griff McGarry had to have turned some heads as they went through that incredible run to Omaha.
I said third. It was fifth round pick for Griff McGarry. Okay, let's pivot to football. There was some news in the last couple weeks. There's, you know, you get all these preseason teams. You get all this other stuff. You get down to the dollars and cents of football. Well, Brent Venables is your man. He's done just right. a marvelous job at Clemson as the defensive coordinator. And now he gets a contract extension, Roddy, that will pay him $2.5 million a year through 2026. I remember when this discussion was about a coordinator making seven figures, period, right. Not two times seven figures and change.
Good for Brent Venables. I mean, to be able to make that amount of money at being a defensive coordinator at a school where you've got an opportunity to win a national championship and you don't have to deal with all the things that a head coach does, good for Brent Venables. But look, he's earned it. He has absolutely earned it. He's been the best defensive coordinator on a year-in, year-out basis in the entire country. And his place, I think it just shows you the value that Dabo Swinney puts on Brent Venables and also that Clemson puts on Brent Venables to make sure that he is taken care of. You have not only the fact that he's not going to be looking around for other jobs, but also the fact that there's a little pride to having the highest paid coordinator in the land and being the guy that's that coordinator. So congratulations to Brent Venables. Next time we're on Clemson's campus, if we can go out to lunch. Coach V, I think you got lunch for me and Wes. I think so.
Speaking of Brent Venables, Ross Taylor produced a marvelous tweet based on Brent Venables and his success as a defensive coordinator. The oldest members of the Clemson defense, super seniors Nolan Turner and Regan Upshaw, were born in November of 97. Brent Venables does not have a losing season in their lifetime, and teams with him on staff have won at least 10 games in 21 of those 24 seasons, Roddy. That's crazy.
Crazy indeed, especially when you consider that spans three schools. I mean, he was at Kansas State early in that time when Kansas State had it rolling. 11 win seasons in the late 90s, being a national championship contender. Obviously, his run at Oklahoma and now Clemson. That's bananas. But Wes, the other thing is Ross Taylor stating that the super seniors on Clemson's team were born in 1997. That was a little shocking to me. That was a little shocking to my system. I don't know how you took that. But 1997 being a super senior, that was a little jarring when I saw that in a tweet.
No, I'm with you on that part. All right, off to golf. For the second consecutive year, an ACC woman has captured the prestigious North and South Women's Amateur at Pinehurst number 2. Gina Kim follows Rachel Keene. The Duke star becomes the fifth Blue Devil to win the honor. Rachel Keene of Wake Forest won it a season ago, so our congratulations to Gina Kim, who, of course, is a marvelous player for Coach Brooks and Duke, and follows Rachel Keene. Second straight year the ACC's captured that. A record number of ACC athletes, Roddy, were named to the Academic Honor Roll. 5,792? That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, it is. That's a massive number. I don't even know how to put that number into context, but congratulations to all those student athletes. I think we should also mention that this happened during a time where school was not the same for these athletes. You're having to deal with COVID tests. You're having to deal with online classes in a lot of situations. You're having to deal with all of the things of the pandemic, you know, social distancing, having to do stuff over Zoom. And yet you still have a record number of athletes making the honor roll. I think that's absolutely incredible. It just goes to show you the resilience of this group of student athletes that we have in this conference.
Tip of the cap to everybody involved on job well done on the academic side of the house, for sure, in the Atlantic Coast Conference. All right, we saved the best for last in this segment. Yeah, Venables got check. Gina Kim won one of the prestigious amateur events. Henry Davis, number one pick in the baseball draft. But NC State is here for your feelings. This is Tuffy 3.
Oh. Look at those ears, Wes. Look at those ears. Oh, my goodness.
Come on,
I think NC State won the last couple weeks by unveiling Tuffy 3. I mean, look at that. Come on. You can't compete with that. It's adorable.
Wolfpack's here for your feelings. Opening night, by the way, Thursday night, September 2nd, Tuffy 3, when the Wolfpack hosts the Bulls of South Florida right here on ACC Network. Maybe we'll get to see Tuffy 3 before then. There's a rumor, by the way, that Packer and Durham is going to be live in Raleigh on Thursday, September 2nd.
Got to get Tuffy on set, right? I mean, has to happen. It has to happen. I mean, Tuffy, I would assume a good boy like Tuffy, going to be potty trained, going to be on his best behavior. Right. Tuffy has to make it to the set. Has to.
One would think Tuffy probably needs to be up and early Thursday morning visiting with the Pac-Man on set, wouldn't you think?
You guys would be asking for Tuffy to be up a little early. I mean, Tuffy's still a young pup. He may need his beauty rest, so... It's another variable right there.
Sit tight. When we come back, we run the list of who you'll see Wednesday and Thursday in Charlotte. The Coastal side is next, because you know why? The Coastal is first on Wednesday morning from the Queen City. We'll do that more when Packer and Durham continues right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, right here on ACC Network. Roddy Jones filling in for Mark. Looking forward to being in Uptown Charlotte. Roddy will be there with SiriusXM's ACC 371 with Chris Patola, Tom Luganbill, cast of thousands on the radio side, where our full coverage starts at 9 o'clock on Wednesday morning and 9 o'clock on Thursday morning, right here on ACC Network. Wall-to-wall stuff for you. Roddy, we've talked about the presence of quarterbacks at this event, probably as many, if not more, quarterbacks than ever before at an event like this. But you and I were talking before the show, the Atlantic Coast Conference has also looked to have each school bring three players, and I don't ever recall that occurring. That may be a first for this event, too. Now, you came to this event, I believe, twice, is that right, as a player? Is that right, you came twice?
Two times, yep. One time in Greensboro, one time at Pinehurst. That was was actually the first time I ever played golf. That's a separate story for another time. But two times as a player, and we only had two representatives from each school. And it's a long day, Wes. I mean, look, you know from the media side, like it's a lot of talking. It's a lot of back and forth. It's a lot of walking around. But as a player, it can be pretty exhausting. I am excited to see three players per school. I think it makes it feel bigger, which is ultimately, I think, what the ACC wanted. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, let's get to the rosters here. Now, obviously, all head coaches will be there. We've already told you about the presence of quarterbacks. But let's start on the Coastal side, since they'll be front and center on Wednesday morning. And when the commissioner wraps up his comments, we'll start with the Duke Blue Devils, who David Cutcliffe will be there. Dwayne Carter, one of the outstanding defensive linemen they've got. And then Roddy, a guy who, and I know you and I talked about this in the spring, Mateo Durant does not get nearly the love he potentially deserves in ACC football.
He certainly doesn't. I mean, you're talking about a guy that rushed for over 800 yards last year for a team in Duke that really struggled offensively for much of the season. Mateo Durant's one of the best running backs in the entire conference. But I think the most interesting thing with Duke in terms of who they're bringing is the fact that they're bringing Gunnar Holmberg. I mean, we know David Cutcliffe wants his quarterbacks to be the leader of the football team, to be the guy that's the face of the crew, of the team. And Gunnar Holmberg is taking that mantle. You know, we in talking to the coaches in the spring, the way he has handled himself since he's been at Duke, they've been really impressed with. It was a quarterback competition last year with Chase Bryce that ultimately Bryce won. But Gunnar Holmberg really impressed his teammates by the way he handled that and continued to work. So the fact that we're going to get to talk to him and see his demeanor being the guy for Duke, I think is really exciting for a Duke team that, as you know, I mean, we did the spring game, and we've seen them the past couple of seasons really struggled in a lot of areas last year.
Yeah, the turnover situation was really the sidebar to the Blue Devil struggles offensively a season ago. Next on the list, Georgia Tech and Jeff Collins. They bring an interesting combination. Number one, Ace Ely, the linebacker, is a Maryland transfer who has already been elected a captain, Roddy, and was really impressive in the spring. And then the battery of Jeff Thomas and Wanye Thomas, or Jeff Sims and Wanye Thomas. Jeff Sims, one of the more electrifying sophomore quarterbacks, and then Wanye Thomas might be the most veteran piece in that defense for Collins this year.
This is a crew that, as you said, the Ace Ely selection is really interesting. He's not the only transfer that's coming in and is being brought to ACC Media Day before he even plays a game for his current team. We'll get to the other one a little bit later. But I think it just goes to show you a guy that was that had incredible success at Maryland, made it an All Big Ten team, a guy that has come in and really taken hold of that defense. I'm interested to see what he can do for them. This is a Georgia Tech team that defensively was not as good as they expected to be, and I think we expected them to be a year ago. We thought that was going to be the strength, and it was about what the offense was, which was up and down. So Jeff Sims' development is going to be a big part of that season, but Wanye Thomas and Ace Ely are going to have to answer questions about the continued development of that defense as well, because if Georgia Tech is going to continue to take strides with the hardest schedule in the league, that defense and that offense are both going to have to improve in lockstep.
Not just the hardest schedule in the league, Roddy, one of the hardest schedules in the country based on the metrics that we've seen so far during this offseason for Jeff Collins and Georgia Tech. Okay, Miami. Now, you want a little bit of flavor for what the Canes have? Well, get ready. Manny Diaz brings Bubba Bolden, who's one of the outstanding defensive backs in college football. Mike Harley Jr., more on this in a moment. And then, to me, bless your heart, De'Eriq King, if you're going to answer it once, you're going to answer it 1,000 times on Wednesday in Charlotte. Will you be ready for opening week? But to me, Mike Harley, Roddy, real quick, is the beneficiary of Charleston Rambo showing up in South Florida this year.
Yes, absolutely. Mike Harley, they have been looking for some consistency at receiver. They were looking for it all last season outside of Mike Harley. Now you've got it in Charleston Rambo, a guy who produced at Oklahoma and transfers to Miami, not because he wasn't going to play at Oklahoma. He was going to play, and he was going to play a lot. It was just because he wanted to be the guy, and now he can come to Miami and be that. And I don't think there's going to be a player in this league whose walk to the podium is going to be analyzed more than De'Eriq King's. I mean, we are going to pick that apart. How's the knee looking? How's the gait? Is there any limp? Is it significant? If he has to go quickly, can he get a little burst in? We are going to overanalyze that knee and that walk from De'Eriq King the entire time. But more than that, Wes, I'm glad. I am glad that we've got a couple of college hunks who are sponsored and ready to go. Bubba Bolden, De'Eriq King showing up in Charlotte. I just wonder, are they going to have like a sticker? Is there a sponsorship deal there? It's NIL season, so you know we got to think about these things.
Hold on a second. Time out. Are you saying somebody's going to hand out a gift card when they come through doing their interviews? Are you saying that when one of these guys sits down with us, they're going to throw a gift card at us, a 10% card or something like
that? The guy who usually sits here and talks to you on a daily basis is Mr. Marketing. If you can sell it, Mark Packer's going to try and sell it. I'm just thinking like Pack right now. You know, how are these student athletes going to maximize their time in Charlotte? If I'm a student athlete, I'm going to a local business and saying, hey, look, you pay me, oh, I don't know, something. I'll pass out these gift cards to all the media I talk to at ACC Media Days. It's nice and easy. I do the work by passing out the cards. You pay me a little cash. Everybody wins. So I think we should get that at ACC Media Days. I mean, right. Don't you? I'd like a gift card and you can put a little bit of money in somebody's pocket.
Hey, look, I know they get going today in Hoover. I know they were underway last week in Dallas with the Big 12 and the SEC respectively. I think the Pac-12 is also this week. Somebody is going to trigger the media by handing out a koozie, a pen, a gift card, a whatever. It's going to be unbelievable.
Marketing. Well, you saw what's happening with the SEC. Exclusive interviews now worth $10,000. I mean, come on.
All right.
Got to monetize it.
All right, let's go to Carolina. Mack Brown, of course, the Tar Heels expected to be one of the favorites in the ACC and certainly in the nation's top 25. Tamon Fox comes back. Jeremiah Gimmel, Adam Lucas told us a month ago, might be the most important player for Carolina defensively. And, of course, number 7 from Sun Valley will be there, and that's Sam Howell from the Charlotte area, kind of a homecoming for him. There'll be a lot of attention on Howell, but Jeremiah Gimmel made sure he's going to get some questions, Roddy, in the last 2 weeks, didn't he?
He sure did, you know, saying that he and his teammates weren't necessarily in favor of a 12-team playoff. He's going to have to answer that question. I'm not sure there's anybody in the conference, though, that's bringing a more experienced group on the defensive side of the ball than North Carolina's bringing. Tamon Fox has played a ton of football. Jeremiah Gimmel has played a ton of football. And the questions that he's going to get asked the most are the one that we just talked about with the 12-team playoff. And then two, what's it going to be like not standing next to Chaz Surratt? That is going to be the thing that he's going to have to answer over and over and over. And I think that he is going to have a lot of good answers for what that defense can be this year because of who they're bringing back.
All right. Pittsburgh is also up on the Wednesday slate as well. Pat Narduzzi's team, we talked about, you know, behind Miami and behind Carolina, whatever order that becomes, where do the Panthers fall? Jordan Addison exploded on the scene a year ago as a rookie. Immense talent, game breaker. Deslin Alexander could be the next big star on the defensive end for the Panthers. And, of course, Kenny Pickett, veteran presence, and quietly, Roddy has built a little bit of a following in the offseason as a guy whose game is starting to be respected just beyond the walls of the ACC.
Yeah, under the radar, I think Kenny Pickett is probably as excited as any quarterback in this conference about who he has coming back because Jordan Addison, obviously, is coming back. He's on that list. But Taysier Mack is healthy again. Lucas Kroll, Israel Abanikanda. That Pittsburgh offense has a lot of reason to be excited. So if Kenny Pickett walks in and looks like he's lighting up the room, it's not just going to be because of the flowing locks. It's also because of the guys that he's got coming back to help him on that offense.
Yeah, you mentioned Lucas Kroll. We're going to dive into this tight end thing tomorrow. We'll talk to David Teal about it coming up. He's released an all-ACC preseason team that has James Mitchell at tight end, and rightly so. Mitchell, Mallory, Kroll, take your pick. There's about a half dozen guys you could choose as an all-ACC preseason. Virginia, Bronco Mendenhall, he's bringing a quarterback and a half. Brennan Armstrong, who had a great season a year ago. Keaton Thompson, of course, a wide receiver slash quarterback, and a guy, Roddy, that quite frankly, when Joey Blunt was on the field last year, Virginia was better as a football team on that side.
The question for Virginia on defense is how do you keep the secondary healthy? How do you keep that defense healthy? And I don't know that Virginia's going to have any great answers, but the frustrations that they must have had the past couple of years with the injuries that they've had, particularly in the secondary, have to be front of mind. And then you mentioned Brennan Armstrong and Keaton Thompson. I think the most interesting thing about that is, how is Ketan Thompson going to be used? How many reps at quarterback is he taking? What kind of packages are we looking at? Because teams are going to have to treat him as if he is a quarterback. And the other question, how many reps outside of quarterback is Brennan Armstrong taking? Because can you imagine having both of those guys on the field and them being truly interchangeable? That changes the game. And I thought Robert and I was really innovative with how he used those two guys, really three if you throw in Lindell Stone, mm-hmm. those three guys that they had to use last year due to injury and the fact that Ketan Thompson wasn't 100% from a throwing standpoint last year. So that's going to be fascinating to talk to Bronco Mendenhall and that Virginia crew about.
Virginia Tech is the last of the coastal schools, of course, on Wednesday. Justin Fuente, their head coach. We've mentioned Braxton Burmeister, who another guy you're hoping is at full speed for the Hokies. Shamari Connor on the defensive side. And when James Mitchell walks into that ballroom, that'll be about as big as his hometown, Big Stone Gap, Virginia. But he is some kind of athlete at tight end for the Hokies. And, again, one of the premier tight ends in the country and certainly one of the best in the ACC.
Yeah, and a guy whose stats have not reflected what he means to that team and all the things that he can do, the versatility, the ability to line up in the backfield, the ability to take handoffs and obviously catch the ball down the field, does it in the blocking game as well. We've seen how Justin Fuente can move those chess pieces mm-hmm. around on offense. Look at what he did when he had Dalton Keene and James Mitchell. So I would expect to see James Mitchell all over the field this season and really fascinated at how Braxton Burmeister turns out as a full, getting a full offseason and as a full year as a starter. He's an incredible athlete. He's got a little bit of gunslinger in him. He's going to throw the ball down the field. So it's a big year for Virginia Tech. They've got a big opening game that we already talked about. But I'm interested to see just the feeling that they have walking in there, because I would guess there's some quiet confidence with the Hokies.
Well, and Roddy, too, we touched on this back in the spring a little bit, early part of the summer. Really a great offensive line, too, even with the loss of Darrisaw. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about some real power in the offensive front in front of Burmeister.
Yeah, you are. And look, I think when you look at the offensive line, how do you replace Christian Darrisaw is going to be the number one question. But let's not forget Brian Hudson and Doug Nestor also departed that team, and those are big pieces. Now, does that mean they are devoid of talent? Absolutely not. Luke Tenuta is a really good player. Lasita Smith is a really good player. Like, they've got players. So when you look at how this group comes together, how do those departures affect the group, and how do you replace the first rounder at left tackle? We saw Louisville have to do it a year ago. We're not as successful as maybe they had hoped. How does Virginia Tech do it?
All right, sit tight. More to come on Packer and Durham on this Monday on the ACC Network. When we come back, we'll check in on number 8 of the Pitt Panthers, Kenny Pickett. Maybe one of the most experienced guys in all of college football taking snaps. How's he getting ready for 2021? Next on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, Roddy Jones is here. Mark, for those of you who haven't been following our little story here, Pack is tested positive for the Delta variant and therefore is not able to be with us on the show this week. Maybe Friday, we'll see. Hope he's feeling better. Does have some symptoms, but fortunately double vaccinated back in April. So... tested positive when he got back from vacation, and we wish him all the best. Look forward to having him with us. We're going to miss him like crazy in uptown Charlotte because that's his kind of place now. Stuff can happen in the middle of the road. Pack can get out among the people a little bit. So we wish you all the best, Pack. Stay healthy. Get back to us as soon as you can. Looking forward to seeing Absolutely. Kenny Pickett on Wednesday in Charlotte as well with Pat Narduzzi, who says that Pickett's the most underrated guy in college football. So Katie George caught up with Kenny Pickett to find out what's been going on in the offseason to get ready for a big 2021.
Without attention to detail, you'll miss a lot of little things that turn into big things pretty quickly.
How about a shot here? He's got it! Touchdown!
If a guy's technique, if his eyes are on the receiver.
Perfect throw.
If his eyes are in the backfield. He's inside technique, outside technique, that changes everything in a certain play.
And the Panthers
score a touchdown.
Touchdown. Are you kidding me?
Being able to pick up on those small keys and take advantage of what the defense has given me has, you know, improved my game.
Pitt quarterback Kenny Pickett had only 3 scholarship offers from Power 5 schools before signing with the Panthers in 2017. 1 year later, he earned the starting role and has made a name for himself in the ACC. Not because of the moments you see on the field, but in the moments when nobody is watching.
Kenny's a worker. Kenny worked all summer. When Kenny goes home to see his family, he goes and works out again. He goes, you know, to the training center. He goes to see his quarterback trainer that he has back home. He's working all the time. All he cares about is football.
I've known Kenny since he's been like 6-7 years old. He's a hard worker. He's a class act. He's a driven kid. He's everything you want in a quarterback.
Tony Rossiopi is a personal QB coach and an instructor at the Manning Passing Academy. Created and run by the first family of quarterbacks, Archie, Cooper, Peyton, and Eli.
I haven't put many guys up to nominate to work the camp from a college standpoint, and he was the first kid that I brought to Archie Manning. You know, I just said, listen, we got to get this kid to camp.
I ended up getting a text from Archie Manning, you know, that I was invited to the Manning Passing Academy, and it was, you know, unbelievable getting a text first off from Archie Manning, who's a legend in the game, coming from a legendary family. So I just called him immediately and, you know, told him I'll definitely be there. And, you know, I was just looking forward and grateful for the opportunity.
Hey, let's go. All right, what are y'all doing talking to me? Go get me your coach.
I think it's a chance for all the kids to come in and throw with the best.
Probably take about 6 steps.
You know, in the 8 years I've been here, we've had the number one pick there almost every year. We've had, you know, we've had the who's who of college football. And then the second thing, it's you're just around Eli and Peyton.
Right, and you're scrambling.
Having a chance to talk, you know, not only with Peyton and Eli, but other quarterbacks and getting their opinions on certain things and trying to take a piece of everyone's game from that experience and just mold it into my own. The classroom session with Eli and Peyton is probably the most important hour that we all had there. You don't want to miss any second of it. You want to make sure that you're soaking everything in that they're saying. Kind of a hectic hour and you just didn't want to miss. I think I had like 6 pages of notes by the time I was ended up being finished there. I didn't kind of pick my head up. I was just writing down to make sure I didn't miss anything.
Those notes have become a lasting guidebook for Pickett. Last season, he ranked 3rd in the ACC in passing yards per game behind only Trevor Lawrence and Sam Howell.
The biggest thing is how to prepare throughout the week. So it's really Monday to Friday was where it helped me the most. And then obviously that just improved my level of play on the field because, you know, if you're not prepared, you're not going to go out there and play well. So learning how to break teams down through film and having a proper schedule of how to go about that throughout a work week and a game week was the biggest thing that I took away.
I've seen a lot of great quarterbacks in my years. He is up there with all of them. There's no doubt about, you know, what he can do on the field. Kenny's an NFL football player, period.
To Katie George, great stuff with Kenny Pickett. Roddy, I know we get into these lists, right? I understand it's a staple of the summer. And Sam Howell is going to be at the top of just about every list in the ACC. We talked about this. Pat Narduzzi says he's underrated, maybe the most underrated quarterback in the ACC. Where do you fit Kenny Pickett in the pantheon of 21 and ACC quarterbacks right now?
I think the conversation starts with Howell and King, and then I think you immediately go to Kenny Pickett. And the only reason we are not talking about Kenny Pickett at the same level as we do Sam Howell and De'Aaron King is really because of injury last year. I mean, This is a guy that got hurt in the Boston College game, really willed his team for much of that game on a bum ankle, and then had to miss a couple of games, played the back half of the season hurt. So I think Kenny Pickett is poised with good health to have an incredible football season. And when you talk about things that you look for from an NFL standpoint, arm strength, athleticism, knowledge, he's got it. And this is a guy that was sitting there with an invite to the Senior Bowl a year ago. So they already thought that he was ready to be on that stage and be an NFL football player. Comes back for another year with a loaded offense. I like Kenny Pickett a lot. I like this Pitt offense a lot this year, Wes. I know you do too.
Well, I do. I think they've got all the ingredients and an evolving and kind of an unknown in the offensive line. It's going to be interesting to watch it materialize. By the way, Eric McClain has been on social media. Our ACC Network partner has been doing rankings, top five in like every position, right? His quarterback list came out in early July, and he had Sam Howell, DJ Uiagalelei, De'Eriq King, Phil Jurkovec, and Brennan Armstrong. That was his top five. Kenny Pickett, still underrated. Sit tight. Hour one in the books.
And look, I can assure you that that's on the wall somewhere in the Pitt facility. Somewhere. Kenny Pickett, not top five. Emacs providing some bulletin board material for some of these schools.
Eric's defense will start on Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock right here on ACC Network. All right, sit tight. Hour two coming up next. Looking forward to visiting with David Teal, among others. And who we'll see in Charlotte on the Atlantic side kicks off hour two on this Monday on the Atlantic Coast Conference Television Network.
Packer and Durham.